All right, welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 21, I believe. Is that correct, Daryl?
That's what it says on the spreadsheet, dude. The spreadsheet is God.
So oh, yeah, the spreadsheet says 21, it does. All right, I'm your host, Corey Murphy, here with Daryl Feltner.
What up?
And we're going to talk a lot of standard with us this week, so bear with us here. There's a lot of newness to the format, and it's exciting.
Hey, all I have to ask is don't forget to play just the two of us at the beginning again, because we're all alone again.
So. Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah, Nick is playing Legacy this week, so let's wish him
what a scumbag. I wish I was in on that noise.
Man. What's he doing with all those highbrow Legacy folk?
I know.
Showing off his
brain. I mean, he's playing the format now that it's been fixed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now that there's no deck through time.
I'll talk about that later, but that format got fixed.
All right. The standard top eight from the indie SCG.
I'm so sad that I couldn't go to this SCG because it's in my hometown. So I would have gotten free hotel and delicious food and got to play some Magic. And holy shit, is standard sweet.
Yeah.
Like, this format looks excellent.
We've been talking about how our mana base is just, like, so perfect in standard right now, and now I believe it.
Have it all. Yeah, we don't have it all yet, and the mana base is insane.
Mm-hmm.
My only
concern with the dual lands was that they matched the fetch lands, you know? So, like, you've got your blue-black fetch land to fetch out a blue-black dual land. So that made it just a little bit less ideal. But so apparently that's not a problem.
You want a good rule on how to know what dual lands you can fetch and what dual lands you can't?
What's a good rule?
Or what colors you can fetch, what colors you can't?
Yeah.
So take your fetch land and look at it. So
okay, doing that right now.
All
right,
sweet. So your fetch land has two colors. Each of those colors has enemy colors.
Yeah.
Whatever enemy color they share in common is the color you can't get with that fetch land. So if you look at Flooded Strand, you can never fetch red mana yet because we have Prairie Stream, which gets blue-white.
Yep.
Sunken Hollow, which gets blue-black. And we have the green-white fetch land, so you can get blue, white, and green, and black. But there's no red-blue duel yet. So you can't get red. And there's no white-red duel yet, so you can't get red. So your Flooded Strand can fetch you anything but red.
Are we going to get that, do you think? Do you think we're going to get that in the next set in the block?
I think they'll put the back end of the block.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. If you think, like, when the Shocklands came out, it was done in that way. It was in over the course of the three sets of Ravnica that we got all the Shocklands.
Yeah,
I think the fetch lands were not the case. We're not the same case where, you know, they're split up over the...
So this is not even a topic we had, but sidebar.
Yeah.
Once you think the mana bases, like once they fill out the fetch land, the dual lands,
yeah.
Do you think the mana bases in this standard are going to be better than the mana bases in the Ravnica standard that had the check lands? So it had like Glacial Fortress and like the ally color check lands. So which mana base do you think is better?
Ooh, once we get that filled out?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to not answer your question and instead add to the discussion here, are they better than the Reflecting Pool of Vivid Era?
Oh, never. Not even close.
All right.
I mean...
Okay, cool. I think you're going to agree on that.
So, yeah. Like, that's, I think, the best mana base era ever. Like, you cast literally anything you wanted. And it was great. Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, that mana base was great for fixing your colors, but it was also great for making it so like multicolored aggressive decks were just slower and made your control decks and mid-range decks better too.
Well, so there weren't a ton of multicolored aggressive decks. Your multicolored aggressive decks were like fairies and stuff like that, and they had lands that were fixed their mana based on the creature type they had. So like if you had a fairy, your fairy land that made both your fairy colors came into play untapped, stuff like that,
right?
So, the mana base, like, there weren't a lot of multicolor aggro decks that played the dual lands, or the vivid lands in that format. But that format was a touch slower.
Yeah.
So, it was, like, the perfect mana base for that format.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. All right. But then, between the fetch, or the Shockland and Bunnyland mana base, I don't know. I think that this is better. I think that what we've got right now is better because you can fetch out the duels. So
I just
like,
love the fact that I get to play a pile of basics because
yeah.
I don't know if any of you know this about me, But I'm a ginormous fan of basic lands. I hate losing to Wasteland and Legacy. It tilts me beyond no end. Like, of all the fancy dual lands you can play in Legacy, I play a deck with, like, 8 basic lands. I play more basics than I do dual lands because I hate losing to Wasteland. So the fact that I get to play, like, the fact that I can create the game such a way that all my lands come into play untapped for the entire game, that makes me really happy because I like to cast my spells. So, big fan of these mana bases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny about this is you're talking about like non-basic land hate. Like, this is a format where Standard is built to have this.
None of that.
Noise. Well, it's got Crumble the Dust, right? But Crumble the Dust is not gonna do work in a format where you're running like 12 fetch lands, probably not that many. That's an over exaggeration.
Eight,
but
8 to 10.
And then you search out like, you know, your 1 or 2 of dual lands because that's all you need to run. You've got a few basics in there, and then you kind of just like fill in the rest with like either your pain lands or your tricolor
Haven,
tap lands.
Haven of the Spirit Dragon if you're in that neighborhood.
But there's not one non-basic that you really have the full 4 of, is there? Potentially the green or the black white. The attack land. I'm gonna call them attack lands. Shambling Vent.
Oh, the main lands. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you're a 2-color deck, you're obviously playing like the full 4 canopy vista and stuff like that.
Well, are you in a 2-color deck?
Absolutely.
Do you need to? Yeah.
There's no downside. Like, so
there
you like
a downside?
No, there's not. How? What downside is there in playing a 2-color deck with 4 canopy vista? Like, if you're playing green white, where is the downside in playing 4 canopy vista? Because like you put a forest into play. And you put a planes into play, and every one of your fetch lands gets you both your colors untapped for the rest of the game.
The downside is having to draw a hand that has 1 basic and 2 canopy vistas in it.
It's so infrequent.
But here's the alternative.
Fetch lands and basic,
here's
so
the alternative.
Infrequent.
You run a shit ton of fetch lands that are on one of your 2 colors. Whereas, okay, so if you're running like a Flooded Strand instead of a Plains, right? That's just marginally better because it can fetch out like maybe 1 of 2 or 3 canopy vistas.
Sure. I don't see the problem with doing both of those things. With playing off-color fetches and playing the maximum of the dual land. Because like you have, like, if you look at Michael Major's green-white Megamorph deck, if he doesn't have the full 4 canopy vista in it, I'm going to want to punch him in the face.
Yep, he doesn't.
Oh my god, I hate you, Michael Majors.
And in fact, look, he's got exactly the thing I just described. He's got 3 Flooded Strands in there.
Well, he's playing a Blighted Step. Like, theoretically, if he wasn't playing this Blighted Step because of the synergy with his deck, he would be playing that.
He's got 4 Wooded Foothills in here, because why not?
Yeah.
You know, I think this is...
I don't see the reason why he's not playing 4 Canopy Beast in this deck. He has 10 basics. Like, what is he doing?
So then again, the mana situation allows you to run things like the Blighted Steps.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then if you're like not so bullish on your tap lands, you can also run the things like the spell lands, the common cycle of lands that does stuff when it comes into play. What does the white one do?
Does it matter?
Yeah, it does.
Hold on. I have to go to gather.
All right, and then while you're there, what's the green one?
I have to go to gather.
Because this deck doesn't play a lot of one drops. Warden of the First Tree.
Play some Warden of the First Trees.
Granted, that's a one drop that you want on turn one all the time.
And so ignore my typing all last week.
Yeah. Well, okay, so think about this. Like, Warden of the First Tree, you can't guarantee that to be on turn one. You're going to be playing on turn two, which means you can't activate his ability on turn
two.
Yeah,
it's
awful on turn two.
That guy is not good on turn two.
But turn one and then attack and threaten the pump, that's beautiful, right? Because then you can always throw it on a Hangerback Walker afterwards.
There's no threat in the pump. There's just straight up the pump. Like,
threaten the pump. If I've got a Hangerback Walker, I want to get that thing online. Because then turn three, I've got an option to threaten the pump again and then pump my Hangerback Walker.
Yeah, like how big – then you're playing me, how big does my Hangerback Walker game, which is kind of awkward.
Like, I suppose. It depends on what the opponent's got out.
Please, why can't I Google or gather or search this information? That's all I want.
Come on, Daryl. Get on it, man.
Dude, I'm trying.
I don't even know what they're called, so
that's why I have to do this.
Oh, okay. Let me see here. Maybe I can pull something up. Anyways, let's talk about the top eight that we've got from this event.
Let's talk
here.
About standard.
As we talked about the beauty of the mana bases we now have, it's evident in this top eight where we have like four color midrange and five color bring to light and Abzan control. Which does this Abzan control deck splash for a color? Or no, it's just straight up
so
green.
So all of the lands that you asked about, the tap lands, do absolutely nothing. Sandstone Bridge gives a creature +1/+1 vigilance, not even close to relevant. Fertile Thicket looks the top five cards of your deck. You can reveal a basic land from among them and put the card on top of your library, and the rest on your bottom in any order.
Okay.
So theoretically, you could play Fertile Thicket if you had enough lands and look at the top five cards of your library and put them on the bottom.
Okay. So those are pretty lame. Those are pretty lame. But hey, imagine an Abzan aggro deck though, where you can run the black one though that puts a creature on top of your deck.
I mean,
because that one's like pure utility.
No.
Is it a May, the black one?
Yes.
And you don't like it in an Abzan aggro deck?
No. Aggro decks can't afford to come to play tap lands.
But that's my whole point, Daryl. I think they can in this case if you build your mana base carefully enough and you've got the canopy vistas at the right number.
No, not a chance.
So. All right, watch. You wait and see.
If they don't have any one drops, fine. But if you have a plan to play any number of one drops, I would want zero going to play tap lands.
Well, what one drops are there? There's one in the first tree.
Bloodsoak Champion.
Abzan aggro plays Bloodsoak Champion now?
I mean, it should. Card's really good in an aggro deck.
Okay. I mean, they're not playing Thoughtseize anymore.
Correct.
They might play Despise, yeah.
Card's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Top 8.
All right, let's do it.
Let's take a look at each one of these decks.
All right, boom. Atarka Red. Brian DeMars.
Oh my god, there's a Mandiki Slide Runner.
A McKindy Slide Runner.
Whatever, Mandiki. I call it the wrong one.
I don't know why he's not running more of those guys. He's got 10 fetches in the deck.
The card's bad.
You think it's bad? All right. We're gonna have this conversation
now. The last
now.
Thing you want to do is draw a land and have this guy trigger landfall in like turn 4.
Yeah,
no, thank you.
Well,
not interested.
All right, let's do this real quick though. 4 Zergo, 4 Abbot, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, 2 Lightning Berserker, 2 Chandra, 1 McKindy Slide Runner, 4 Wild Slash, 4 Atarka's Command, 4 Titan Strength, 4 Dragon Fodder, 3 Become Immense, 3 Teemer Battle Rage. You've all seen it already. This is the reason Atarka's Command is $12 right now.
Yeah, so literal, just one McKindy Slide Runner as new cards and 2 Cinder Glades.
Yeah.
This is terribly exciting. He didn't do much innovating there.
No, I mean, he's got the Teemer Battle Rage. Like, he's kind of a different style of red deck.
That card was...
It's not new, but it's new to this deck. This is the red deck's evolution. I'm wondering is why he's got 4 Zergo Bellstriker in the deck over, like, the third Lightning Berserker.
Dash? No, Lightning Berserker dashes too.
It does. Yeah, Zergo's a legend. It's tough to run 4.
I got nothing. It's 2 power guy. It's just a 2 power 1 drop.
Okay. Here's what I do. I take out one of those Zergos and I put in a third Lightning Berserker.
I mean, that's fair.
I think
Mars likes 2 power 1 drops, but
yeah.
I think the number of games where you play a 1/1 on turn 1 is going to be just like super disappointing.
Yeah. So he's all about the so we've got 10 fetches for our Delve Fodder when we want to become immense on one of your creatures and just close out the game. But become immense plus Teemer Battle Rage equals GG.
What does this do? Oh, it gives the guy trample.
Yeah.
Well, that's a thing. Alright. Yeah, you're dead.
Yep.
So what is this like?
You're talking about the Ferocious on Battle Rage?
Yeah, I didn't know that it gave the guy trample. That's cute.
McKindy Slide Runner has trample, by the way.
Oh, okay. That makes that guy not offensive. I'm just thinking of like Swift Spear.
No, he is offensive.
I'm thinking of like Swift Spear, Become Immense, Battle Rage.
Yeah.
Like all the power.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that? 3, 4, 3, 9, 18 double strike? And to be able to cast Become Immense for 1 mana, you had to have done something that game.
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty good.
Also, Titan Strength, Become Immense. Or excuse me, Titan Strength Battle Rage. That's 3 mana.
Titan Strength
is going to guarantee your Ferocious too. So this is one of those just like balls to the walls. Like, I'm going to just do everything I can to like surprise and kill you when you're tapped out dead.
This is pseudo offensive to me. How ridiculous this deck is.
But okay, really quick, check out his sideboard. He's got 4 Hangerback Walker, which is new tech for these red decks.
That card's the best card standard, probably.
It is. So alternatively, he can just be like, oh, okay, I'm playing against a deck that has a lot of like removal to take care of these, you know, random blowout situations. Let's just go wide with this Hangerback Walker, a Tarkus Command thing.
Sick.
Yeah. That hasn't been that's a combination that we haven't had yet, is it?
Nope. That's going to make somebody real sad when they kill a 3/3 Hangerback Walker, and then Damaris casts the Tarkus Command. They're just going to be like, oh, God, why did I kill the Hangerback Walker?
Yeah. So I didn't see any of this, but I heard that people were a little upset about this deck just tearing it up, like a little bit Naya Blitz style.
I mean, I don't think anyone's ever going to be happy when week one red deck wins. And I don't think it's like, oh, red deck's bad. It's just like, I don't think that like a large section of the like, based on like looking at the tools all the decks have for them in their like kind of arsenals, I just don't think people want a red deck to be good.
But it has to, though. I think we need this to like check ourselves a little bit, because if we're playing like 4 and 5 color decks, like we have to like be brought down to earth a little bit, and we've got to be ready to like consistently deal with problems like this.
Stop being reasonable.
I'm sorry, man, but that's what a good format needs.
Nope.
We have to not assume that we can't just get like taken down in 4 turns. We can't just like slowly build our empire and do ridiculous things like play our 8th Siege Rhino.
But what if I want to live in the castle? Like, why can't I live in the castle? That's not
king
right
of the castle.
Yeah, I want to be the king of the castle. Why can't I do that?
All right, Slesnia aggro. We need to talk much about this. We already kind of covered it.
Green white Mega Wars.
Exactly what you'd expect. 4 full Gideon in the deck. Boom. Yeah,
Gideon. I watched Michael Majors play this deck. Gideon is bonkers.
Yep.
Wingmate
Rock.
Let me do this. Hangerback Death Mist and Protector. Duh. Hidden Dragon Slayer, gotta have some extra guys to flip for Deathmist Raptor. Sometimes you need to face up 2-1 against the red deck. Warden of the First Tree, fine. Wingmate Rock, kind of hard to beat because it flies. Nissa flips occasionally when you play this deck, and it's comical. Gideon's insane. Jamoke's Command Valor Stance, duh. Evolutionary Leap, the best card in the sideboard by about 100,000 miles.
Yeah, funny story, this aggro deck is playing more Nissas than like any of the Abzan control decks ever did.
Yup.
Which is legit, because it's got 25 basic, or it's got 25 lands in it, not basic.
Yup.
Excuse me.
He's going to get to, he gets to 7 lands.
So let's... any kind of Death Mist, Dawn Protector like package is going to be pretty mana hungry, so I get that. And
well, it's also like
Wingmate Rock, you know, it's
pretty... just, have you read the card Evolutionary League? He can play the longest game in the history of the world, not care.
Yeah,
he'll just, oh, you want to kill my guy? Sure, Evolutionary Leap. Oh, you're gonna kill my Hangerback Walker? Sure, I'll make some toppers. Evolutionary Leap.
No, like, kidding. Another great interaction with Hangerback Walker.
That is, in fact, what they call synergy, boys.
All right, 4 color mid range.
Hold on, we gotta
read this one.
Hold on, four. Wait,
I'm gonna.
Do we skip Esper Dragons?
No.
Oh, I'm going on Star City's website.
Oh, okay. They're tied. So they're tied.
Yeah, they're tied.
Right, 4 color midrange. This is where our 4 Jaces come
just
in.
Just Kai Black. All right.
4 Mantis Rider, 4 Hangerback Walker, 2 Dragon Master Outcast. Pretty cool. 1 Butcher the Horde, 4
so
Crackling
card,
Doom. Hang on. Let's get through this first.
Oh, sorry.
3 Dig, 3 Valor Stance, 2 Wild Slash, 2 Ojutai's Command, 1 Dispel, 1 Jeskai Charm, 1 Fiery Impulse, and 3 Gideon. Okay, go.
Cool,
Dragon Master Outcast.
So I got to watch that card on camera in a winning in for top 8.
Yeah.
A guy just like casted it and it made 7 dragons or like 5 dragons, and he missed a dragon trigger but just like steamrolled his opponent, and like his opponent killed it, and he's like, all right, Ojutai's Command, bring it back. And I was just like, well, that is it. We can just lock that one up. That card, if games go long, that card is going to be busted.
Okay, so as a reminder, Dragon Master Outcast is a 1/1/1. Start your upkeep. If you control 6 or more lands, put a 5/5 dragon into play, flying. Now,
yep.
It is the most killable creature in the entire game.
Oh, it's very dead.
One for
absolutely.
One. So if you allow this if you allow someone to untap with this creature for 6 turns, then you're doing something wrong in the first place.
I mean, they were in the top deck war, and like,
okay,
he drew Dragon Master Outcast and played it. His opponent drew a Crackling Doom and killed it. He drew an Ojtai's Command and passed. His opponent drew a Siege Rhino, played it. He countered the Siege Rhino and brought back Dragon Master Outcast. And his opponent was just like, oh, well, not beating that card. It's like he just drew like Crackling Doom, Tastigar, and his opponent was like, all right, make a dragon. And just didn't matter. All the cards he drew were irrelevant.
It's such a weird card because it's a 1 for 1. It's a 1-drop, but it's not a 1-drop. Really, yeah. It's like a 6-drop that you want, or a 5-drop. No, it's a 6-drop. Okay, 6-drop that you want to like, you've got like all this wiggle room to like hold for like protection for it. Because you just want it to last a turn, right?
So you've want you to think about this. Think about Explosive Vegetation into Dragon Master Outcast. Or like play Dragon Master Outcast and then like have 4 lands on turn 3 or 4 and then cast Explosive Vegetation. And be like, all right, untap on turn 5, make a dragon.
Yeah.
Hope you killed that guy, otherwise you're in trouble. So, yes, deck is so sweet.
Yeah. Should we keep going with this? Normally you don't just blast through the top 8, but this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, this is really cool.
Alright, Esper Dragons. Boom.
Dragons.
You want to read this one, Daryl?
I got it. 4 Dragon Lord Ojutai, 2 Silumgar, the Drifting Death, an Ugin, 5 Island, 4 Swamp, 2 Blighted Fen, which is the sacrificed creature, colorless land, 4 Flood Strand, 2 Haven and Spirit Dragon, 4 Polluted Delta, 2 Prairie Stream, 4 Sunken Hollow, 2 Complete Disregard, 4 Dig Through Time, 3 Foul Tongue Invocation, 2 Horribly Awry, 2 Scatter to the Winds, 4 Silumgar Scorn, 3 Utter End, 2 Crux of Fate, 3 Despise, a Languish, Sideboard, and Orbs of Warding, 4 Ration Clerics, a Disdainful Stroke, a Dispel, a Dragon Lord's Prerogative, a Foul Tongue Invocation, a Negate, 3 Jace Viren's Prodigy, an Obnixilus Reignited, and a Languish.
That was the sideboard.
Okay.
This is
Esper Dragons, man. Like this is a very nice evolution of Esper Dragons. I like Dragon Lord Ojutai's good card. Ugin's still powerful. Ugin plus 2 Havens kind of being the end game trump. I like the guy's use of Blighted Fen. Very elegant.
Horribly Awry is contextually a powerhouse in Standard right now.
Oh, yeah. Horribly, like, the best cards, like, I watched him play this deck once or twice. The best cards I saw him cast were Horribly Awry and Complete Disregard.
So, how do you feel about Complete Disregard?
It beats the poop out of Hangerback Walker.
Yep.
And Den Protector. And Death Mr. Raptor.
Yeah.
It's kind of slow against the red deck. But right. It's pretty good against all those other things.
So, I've got a list that I want to talk about in a little bit after we get through this, but it's Sultai Eldrazi, and yeah, I've been running it on Cockatrice for a bit, and I don't run Complete Disregard in it because what I'm afraid of is there's a really narrow window that you can cast Complete Disregard to actually deal with the Hangerback Walker before it gets too big.
It's so 2 turns.
It is 2 turns.
So it's so 2 turns. You
gotta have it at the right time.
So it's 2 turns, but you're assuming that your opponent is attacking you with it.
Right.
So, like, if you're on the play and they play Hangerback Walker, they play it for 1, turn 3, you can kill it. They make it a 2-2, turn 4, you can kill it. They make it a 3-3, turn 5, you can kill it. And then when they make it, if they don't make it a 4-4 on their main phase, turn 6, you get to untap and try and kill it again in response to them pumping it with Complete Disregard. So you have a 4-turn window. A 3-turn window. It depends on if your opponent's greedy and doesn't do it on their main phase. Otherwise, the window shrinks by 1. But this card is very good. Like, Reeve Soul's a 2-mana sorcery that does the same thing. I'm on the... Or it kills a creature instead of exiling it. I'm a big fan of Complete Disregard. I think it's very nice.
Well, you've got to exile some creatures in the form. Yeah, you've got to exile Hangerback Walk. You've got to exile the dinosaur.
It don't gotta go home, but it gotta get up out of here. That ain't okay. But yeah, Utter End is not surprising at all. I kind of expect this to supplant Ruinous Path as the new Planeswalker removal spell.
Yeah.
Instead of having Ruinous Path take hold because it's an instant. 2 Crux of Fate and a Languish, reasonable sweeper split. Depends on if you more want to keep your Dragon Lord Ojutai alive, or just want to kill things on turn four. Not really too much to say about the sideboard. There's some Jace Variance Prodigies. That card can take control of the game. And all the other cards seem pretty reasonable to me. So not really much more to say about this.
And I think you need the Utter End again for the Hangerback Walker situation. I think that's a card that, like, in this deck, without an exile option, it just gets out of hand for you, you know?
Well, I also think that, like, if you look at his deck, let me look at his deck to make sure I don't say something stupid. Other than the dragons, there are only six sorceries in his deck. So his deck plays in mostly instant speed. So Utter End is going to be better than Ruinous Path.
It does. But it's all, like, also welcome to a standard where, like, every removal spell and every, like, counter spell just happens to be, like, one more mana than you really want to spend on it.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
the worst.
Like, there's not...
Horribly Awry is the perfect number of mana. That is exactly how many mana I would like to spend on that effect. If it was one mana, it would be very broken.
Yeah.
But yes, Complete Disregard, one mana, two mana.
But Silumgar Scorn, though, is the alternative to that because it's, like... Welcome back to Counterspell days, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you have to play a lot of dragons. Powerful. Like,
but we're talking, like, Utter End, Complete Disregard, seemingly overcosted.
Like,
Fall Tongue Invocation, even. Cost three mana. When an Edict Effect should be two, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was that two-mana Edict Effect where your opponent got to choose, but you gain life equal to its toughness. That card was a disaster because it just was brutal.
Yeah.
And so this is three mana, that card.
We're running Cancel in our Scatter to the Winds. We're running five mana Wrath in our
Cancel is just a thing in Standard that you're always going to deal with. If you want an unconditional Wrath, you were told by Wizards like 4 years ago, we're never printing another 4-mana Wrath. That's not a thing that's ever going to happen. Deal with 5-mana Wrath and quit your whining. Like, these are things you should just expect in Standard. They're perfectly reasonable.
Well, and I think this contributes to a healthy format, though. I think Standard's been in a good place for a long time, and it has to do with the fact that control cards are becoming less efficient.
I think 4-mana straight-up Wrath of Gods are fine. Other than that, everything else they've done is fine.
You think
so? I think you can bring back 4-mana Wrath of Gods.
Languish. You have Languish. I think you got to just be
happy. Have you ever casted Siege Rhino, and then, like, your opponent has that in play, and you have a Languish, and you just want to kill yourself?
Yeah, Daryl, the problem here is not the Wrath effect. It's the Siege Rhino. Once that guy goes, I think it's going to be a whole new world.
But Languish then won't be a card. So
right. It will it?
No, it'll rotate.
Okay, well, that's fine. We'll have something else at that time.
But yeah, like, Siege Rhino, Tassiger, all these just big-bodied knuckleheads, like, that have just gigantic butts are a huge problem.
Yeah.
Plus, like, your 4-mana Wrath, it can't trade with a dragon except for Dragon Lord Ojutai. Like, that's also a problem because sometimes you just need to Wrath of God their Dragon Lord of Darkness and be done with it.
Yeah.
But you can't do that with Languish. So I think 4-mana Wrath of Gods are fine. Other than that, 3-mana counter spells, like, all that is perfectly priced. I just think 4-mana Wrath of Gods need to make a resurgence. But that won't happen because that's what Wizards said they don't want. So that's fine.
All right, let's do one more in this top eight.
I think we're going to settle on the same thing, and that's the five-color bring the light.
Jerry Thompson.
Oh boy, Jerry T.
Let me read through this real quick.
Never fails to impress.
It's toolboxy, so we got to go through the selection here. We got 4 Jace, 4 Siege Rhino. Okay, boom, 8 cards that are like representative of the format. 2 Nissa. 1 Silumgar, Drifting Death. 1 Guiltleaf Winnower, which is the guy that kills the non-elf whose power and toughness are uneven or unequal.
Wow, that's
1
that's a lot of text.
Impersonator.
That card's great.
4 Bring Delight, of course. 4 Abzan Charm.
Right.
2 Disdainful Stroke. 2 Murderous Cut. 2 Reeve Soul. 1 Crux. 1 Ugin's Insight. 1 Languish. 1 Ruinous Path. 1 Utter End. 1 Sultai Charm. And then a ton of lands.
Hold on, what does this card do?
Very, very few that are like in multiples of 4. Okay, except for the fetches.
What? How did he fit Ugin's Insight into this deck? What is this? Oh my god.
Yeah, Ugin's Insight is the 5-mana sorcery.
That's
X is the highest converted mana cost among permanents you control, then draw 3 cards. That is a great card. That is a really good card.
Yeah, you bring to light for it. Okay.
I would never run more than 1.
Not even close.
But hey, look.
Would
even
barely
if you scry
run
2. Even if you scry 2 with the Jace, it's effective.
I mean, the unflipped Jace.
Yeah, right. Or scry 0 with a flip Jace. But, you know. So this deck is
oh, I gotta bonkers. Look at the side too. What is this?
All right, we'll read it. Disdainful Stroke. Two of them. This is the sideboard. One Silumgar. One more Silumgar, that is. Two Encase in Ice. One Radiant Purge. One Silumgar's Command. Hey, there he is. One An Offense of the Foremost. Two Obnixless Reignited. Two Duress. And three Radiant Flames.
And another Silumgar. All right.
Radiant Flames is awesome. That card is showing up.
Like, so that, in a lot of these. Like, I yes. just wanted to play the Sunburst. I call it the Sunburst deck. Converge is not a word I'm going to use because I'm old. I want to play the Sunburst deck with like Radiant Flames and Painful Truths and just like mash these sweet three mana do stuff cards together. But no, I can't convince myself to do it because it would involve me buying $80 Jaces. Okay, I'm done with that rant.
Yeah, we'll go there in a second.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So is there any situation in this deck where you'd want to be paying Radiant Flames for less than three?
Not in that build. But, like, if you were a Hangerback Walker deck, say you didn't want to kill your Hangerback Walker that was a 2-2, you could pump it, play Radiant Flames for two, kill all the two toughness creatures, and move on with your day.
I suppose.
You know, things like that. So, in this specific deck, there is no upside. Maybe you don't want to kill your Jace Vryn's Prodigy. You want to Radiant Flames for one.
You know, he doesn't even have Hangerback Walker in this deck. I get it, that's a Bring Delight deck, and that's just not a Nombo with Hangerback. But no strategy, when you're five colors, it's like seems like you just might as well throw in the best artifact creature in the entire set.
Dude, it's the Nombo, man. You just can't play the Nombo.
Because of that one interaction, you have other choices.
Dude, this deck is a delight.
Alright, so, yeah, we're talking about Jace's Friend Prodigy now.
Alright, that guy's a jerk.
It can be got for $70 on TCG Player right now.
It's 70?
NBD? It is an $80 card, according to Star City Game standards.
Somebody just Carol, kick me.
Do
kick
your thing. Have your rant now.
The card is very good. I want you to find for me the last $80 card in Standard.
Was it Bonfire the Damned?
No, that card only made it to 50.
Oh, no way. Really? I feel like it got up to 70 at some point.
I'm pretty sure it did.
All right, let's look. What about the old Jace?
That would be your winner. $100. No, thank you.
While it was in Standard?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
It was $100 in Standard.
What about Baneslayer Angel? That was up to like about $50.
$50, not 80. Okay. Like Baneslayer Angel was 50. Stunfortress was like 30. Batterskull was 50. You know, Jace was 100. Tarmogoyf was 100, or was like 75. Like those are the two cards that were just stupidly costing in Standard.
Yeah.
But you have to go back. When was Jace printed? Like 6-7 years ago now. When the first Zendikar was printed, where's my fetch lands? I don't have to look at it. I don't know. Whatever, my fetch lands are around here somewhere.
Okay.
But yeah, whenever the first Zendikar was printed, infinite years ago, it feels like, Jace was the last $100 card Standard. Like, I get it, it's Jace, and he has a sweet name, and that's cool and everything, but
yeah,
it shouldn't be a $100 card.
So MTG Top 8 does this wonderful thing where it tells you the average cost of the cards on TCG Player if you were to buy the deck. Okay, so here's our top five.
Hold on. Let me here's go our this.
Top five. Okay, Bring to Light. $849 average for a standard deck. Esper Dragons. $732 average for a standard deck. Four color midrange. $839 average for a standard deck. Selesnya Aggro. $749. And a Tarka Red, the winning deck. $430. Even the red deck is almost $500 to build.
I think so.
The money had to go somewhere, and the Tarka's Command spiked because everyone's like, hey, Standard is a format where you spend a lot of money now.
So I'm going to defend it. A Tarka's Command should not be $10. I'm going to guess Cinderglade is like $20.
Cinderglade? $8.
Fetch lands are going to be like $20 just because they're fetch lands. It's like printing $20 bills. So because you're playing so many fetch lands, you're going to have, you know, $200 extra tax.
Well, they're really uneven right now, actually.
Oh, I just looked at all the fetch lands on TCG in the red deck.
Yeah.
They're all $20.
But really? The red deck fetch lands?
Yeah. 1873 for Bloodstained Mire. Wooded Foothills, 2171. Windswept Heath, 1912. Average, $20.
Okay. Are you looking at the mid?
TCG mid. I'm looking at top8.com.
Okay. All right. Because it looks like you can get them for $15. Yeah. But Polluted Delta is significantly more expensive than all of them right now.
Just because it's blue-black and it's in Modern and Legacy.
But that was a pretty drastic change from, like, it hasn't been a long time that these lands have been more than $10. In fact, a lot of them were under $10. Almost all of them were under $10 maybe 3 months ago.
Yeah. Welcome to Standard. And they'll hold that $20 price point because that's just what fetch lands will do.
But are they higher now that we see the format and we see that you need to run so many of them in order for your mana base to be as efficient as it can be?
It's basically when they printed the battle lands and they said these are a thing, fetch land prices, I would guarantee you, if you looked at when they spoiled those, fetch land prices spiked to $15, $16.
Okay.
And then week one happened and it's like, oh, we have to have fetch lands to make these mana bases go, spike again.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like, we've had plenty of time to prepare for this. You had to know that these are cards that are worth stockpiling right now. And not to say that you should have more than your four, because I don't think that, like, a financial gain should even be, like, in a player's sight. Like, you should just be happy with your play set.
Yeah, okay? You should be happy to play Magic the Gathering.
but I'm sure there are people that are kicking themselves as they are, like, climbing right now. I could see these being maintaining $25.
Yeah, like I don't have my non-blue fetches, and that's kind of annoying. But I'm not gonna sleeve up a standard deck that doesn't play blue, probably, so it doesn't bother
me. What about a legacy deck? What about a modern deck? I mean, these are infinitely useful.
Nope, haven't sleeved up a modern or legacy deck that doesn't play blue.
You have a five color deck, Daryl.
It plays five blue.
Color in modern.
All the fetch lands
that doesn't play blue. Gotcha.
Blue.
Okay, gotcha.
All the fetch lands in the deck are blue except for a Marsh Flats.
All right.
Like, the deck is just, all my decks are blue. And, like, if you look at it, I'm looking at the Esper Dragons deck. It's average 732. So 200 of it, let's see, 120 plus 100, 225, plus the six buddy lands, $400 of it is just fetch lands. Hmm. Or $400 of it is your mana base. And another $250 is Jace.
Which is exactly why people choose to play Standard over Modern. But if you're going to spend $800 for a Standard deck or $900 for a Modern deck, I hope that you make the right choice there.
Yeah, like, did you play Modern?
Is Jace going to hold $80? Is it going to stay $80? That can't possibly stay
$80. It's going to hold $80 in Standard.
Okay.
And then once it rotates, I think it'll be $40 because it does see some. It sees a lot of modern play. It sees some French legacy and vintage play.
Yeah,
and it's just a flip planeswalker. That's just going to be a thing. It's cool forever.
But based on the fact that it's a Jace, though, I think people are going to be concerned, and if it's going to move very slow.
Yes, but it's like literally $500 of this Esper Dragons deck is Jace and lands.
Yeah.
Like the rest of it's, Dragon Lurge Tie at $15.
Right,
Crux
right.
of Fate, $2, Scatter the Winds, $6 or $3 because it's new. One Ugin. Ugin's going to be expensive because it's a mythic. Oh my God.
Right.
What? TCG player must be broken. Because it says the average Ugin on TCG player is $88 when you can get it from another place for $23. So I'm gonna guess
that can't be. Are you looking at the Ugin's Fate one?
It's just the whatever one is in the top eight. I'm just using the top eight tool.
Oh yeah, it's telling me 26. So
okay, cool.
Worry. That
that's good.
That
Ugin 26, Obnixilis 20. So there's like a couple of expensive like random cards. But a lot of it is just your mana base and Jace. So it bothers me. It bothers me that Jace, Viren's Prodigy is an $80 card. I can't express in any appropriate way how much it bothers me.
I mean, so what makes it good is like we're looking for lots of opportunities where that -3 ability is going to be really useful.
Nope.
And like, do we have those? I mean, do we have anything that we got out of BFC that's like all about the like main phase instant or sorcery that is like worth recurring?
No, but you know what card got a gigantic boost by a bunch of other stuff rotating? Crackling Doom.
Did it?
Utter End. You just didn't see much Crackling Doom. People
Oh,
are playing
right.
Jeskai splashing black for Crackling Doom. That's how good the card is in New Standard. They're like,
Yeah.
oh, you know the color. Oh, gotta play this Crackling Doom. Boom. Like, that's the best card they can come up with. They're like, Crackling Doom's the nuts.
I wonder how much
Utter
of that,
End.
though, is just about the panic of getting Ulamogged.
I think it's 0%. I think
Zero
you just need
percent?
quality instant speed removal spell. The
Right.
best one you get is Crackling Doom.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so, like, there's another Jeskai deck that splashes for black, and they do black for Crackling Doom and one Tasigur, and two
Yes.
Koligon's Command,
Yes. I
which
bet both of, I
are all
bet the
great.
number of Crackling Dooms in the two Jeskai mid-range decks is equal to 8. Oh, it's
Yeah.
6. Sorry, the other guy only plays 2. My bad.
So the number of cards available to that Jeskai mid-range deck that are played in Eternal formats is incredibly high for standard. I mean, look through
Bonkers.
this.
Yeah.
So I'm looking through the eighth place one. We've got the Jaces, we've got Abbots. Soulfire sometimes appears, Dragonlord Ojutai,
One of, yeah.
Tasker, almost the
Ojutai, one
entire creature
of them.
base.
Yeah. Banned card, Treasure Group.
Right.
Let's see.
Doesn't even
Valor
want
Stance
Dig Through Time.
occasionally gets played in Modern. Crackling Doom, bonkers, and should see more play.
And
Koligon's
Koligon's
Command,
Command.
insane in Modern. Gets some fringe play in Legacy.
And
Like,
Ojutai's Command is getting fringe play in Modern as well.
yeah, like, just. Here's some super powerful cards. Go nuts. Yeah.
So here's what we don't see though. There's no Fathom Feeder in this top eight,
No
which I'm
Fathom
still pretty high
Feeders.
on.
Not
I believe it's gonna
surprised.
be good.
I'm using that card in the deck we're going to talk about a little later,
Oh yeah,
but
you too? Okay. All
yeah.
right, you want to do yours first? We better move on to that.
Yeah, I mean, all right. I'll go to the deck building challenge. I don't know if we're officially endorsing this in the deck building challenge with a prize, but
Okay.
this is sort of a thing that I was just like, I saw. Oh, what the heck is this
Wait,
guy's?
this needs a bumper. I'll make one. Here we go. Let's leave some
Bump
space for a bumper.
this. I saw this guy in the spoiler, and I was intrigued. Halimar Tidecaller. Whenever it enters the battlefield, you return target card with Awaken from your graveyard to your hand. Land creatures you control have flying. It's a 2/3, two and a blue for 2 and a blue, so it's 3 mana.
Yes, I love this guy.
Yeah, so let's look at the spells that we have.
Wait. Hang on. This Talamar Tidecaller, before you even go on, obviously good because it's an Eternal Witness for your Awakened spells. So
Yes.
we're going to look at all the great Awakened spells. But I also want you to realize that he makes your Awakened lands have flying, and that is not negligible at all.
Oh, also not negligible, your Shambling Vent's flying.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, that is
Yeah,
sweet. And
land creatures
Lumbering
you control,
Falls, if you want to go
Shambling
there.
Vent's flying.
3/3
Yes.
Hexproof Flyer seems pretty sweet too.
Yes, this is not negligible.
Okay, and he's a 2/3 body, which is significant.
Yeah, like it's a reasonable blocker. He gets in the way.
Okay, go on. Awaken spells.
So
Hit.
let's look at the reasonable awakened spells we have. There's like a there so the four that I included in the deck I built were Scatter to the Winds. So we have, Dissolve.
Yep.
And this one is like my favorite and the one of the highest. So I want you to do me a favor. So everyone looks at Awaken and goes, wow, that mechanic sucks. Why would I play this card? I want you to take Awaken off of that card. And I want you to replace it with the mechanic. Oh, God, what the heck's it called? Evoke.
Right. It's reverse evoke, isn't it?
Yeah. So look at Scatter the Winds as a draining well that you can also pay one blue to evoke. Now that card's really good.
Yeah.
Like, Draining Whelp was super fine in Standard. Being able to play Draining Whelp for one blue and, like, just sacrifice it. Sure, you don't get the blink tricks, but they would never put that in Standard, so whatever. But, like, here's a Draining Whelp that you can play for one blue.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's a worse training walk, but
Yes. Like, but it's, like, conceptually, like, it can function as Draining Whelp.
right. Okay.
Ruinous Path, there's not really, like, Shriek Maw was my best analog that I could think of. But, like, there's no analog to Wrath of God. And, like, for Coastal Discovery, you're paying one extra mana on your Mull Drifter, and you're getting a 4/4 instead of a 2/2 flyer. Like, these cards are just literally cards with evoke. And so if you look at them like that, they start to look not that bad.
Right.
And so the fact that you have basically a lord for them in Halimar Tidecaller, 10 out of 10. This is, there's something to do. And so I kind of, I wanted to play these really powerful like cards. And the four cards are Scatter the Seeds, Ruinous Path, Coastal Discovery, the Divination, and Planar Outburst, the Wrath of God.
Yep.
Destroy all non-land creatures. So I kind of just like, all four of those cards all kind of fit together in a control shell. Because they're all like very controlling effects. Counterspell, kill your guy, kill all the guys, and draw cards. Seems very like reasonable for a control shell. So like I kind of just like sitting at my desk at work, slapped together a control shell. The deck is nowhere near perfect. I've played zero games with it. I haven't even figured out how to put a Shambling Vent in it, so that's probably wrong. Yeah. But there are just 27 lands, just a whole pile of like the maximum battle lands, 8 basics, 8 fetches, a Haven of the Spirit Dragon, and 2 Blighted Fens. So the Haven of the Spirit Dragon is the combo with 1 Ugin that's in the deck later, and then a sideboard Dragonlord Silengar. So like you have a second copy of those two cards. 3 Despise, 2 Valorous Dance, which is like I don't think is correct because we're splashing white and we're playing this like 2 mana spell that's off color. 2 Horribly Awry, 2 Fathom Feeder. Shout out to Fathom Feeder.
Yep.
Originally I built this deck with 4 Halimar Tidecaller. I kicked it down to 3 because I wasn't so sure like how good the card was going to be. I'd have to play the deck before I could make a call on that. 4 Scatter this to the Winds because I think it's the best card. 3 Ruinous Path and 2 Complete Disregard. A Coastal Discovery, 2 Languish, 2 Utter End, 2 Planar Outburst, 4 Dig Through Time, and an Ugin the Spirit Dragon. And then the sideboard is a smattering of different cards. 3 Irrational Cleric, 2 Negate, 2 Disdainful Stroke, 2 Dispel, a Dragonlord Silengar, a 3rd Utter End, a 3rd Languish, or a 2nd Languish, sorry, or no, a 3rd Languish, a 3rd Complete Disregard, and 2 Tassigar the Golden Fang. So, like, this is a very not polished deck. This literally has no play, just kind of slapped together as a thought experiment. I'm just kind of looking at this, and it feels really powerful. Like, yeah. It feels like you're playing a control deck that, you know, instead of trying to Esper Dragons them, you're like, I'm going to grind you out with these control cards. I'm going to play a turn of witness and get back my control cards. And eventually I'm going to start making my lands into creatures with my control cards. And so you might kill one of my lands, and that's kind of annoying. But I'm playing 27 lands in the deck, so I'm going to have more lands to put into play and to turn into creatures. At some point, your fetch lands, you just turn them into guys, and you don't crack them and go get other lands. Because you just leave lands in your deck so that you can draw more lands. Mm-hmm. And so you have 10 total Awakened spells, I think. 10 total Awakened spells, plus the Halimar Tidecallers. They synergize with Ugin in that your Awakened spells don't get exiled when you minus Ugin. And so you have, you know, 13 finishers and 2 Ugins. 1 Ugin, 1 Haven of the Spirit Dragon. So you have 15 finishers in your deck, but 13 of your finishers also kind of stabilize you along the way. So it kind of gives you a way to manipulate the game. And then I'm trying out Fathom Feeder as a low end of the curve, just a blocker that can trade or eat a burn spell, and kind of that's test card. I don't know if it's going to be good or not. But right.
Well, have you considered all of the options? Have you looked at all the Awakened?
I have looked at all the Awakened spells. I don't like the one that puts a creature on top of their deck.
Okay.
I don't like the one that ices a guy.
Just for shits and giggles, let me go through them here real quick.
Sure.
All right, so you've got your Ruinous Path in the deck already, obviously.
Yep.
Planar Outburst, obviously.
That's the Wrath.
Included.
Okay. 2 of those, yep, in there.
Scatter is in there.
Yeah, 4 Scatters.
Encircling Fissure is a 2 and a white instant. Prevent all combat damage to be dealt by this turn by creatures target opponent control. So you got a fog effect.
I'm not that, but...
Have you considered maybe like a 1-of in that?
I'm not excited by fog in this deck. Specifically.
Okay. All right.
Just because it doesn't deal with a problem, it just delays it, which is, in this deck, you'd much rather be proactively dealing with problems.
Right, right. And not to mention the Awakened is pretty lame. It's 2.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty bad, yeah.
Never mind. I'm gonna hold my tangent for a second. We'll go through SCs before
oh,
I say
no,
it.
Go ahead.
Okay. Coastal Discovery, you've got those. Those are the...
Discovery, yeah.
Yep. Rising Miasma. This is 3 and a black for a sorcery. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. Awaken 3 for 7 mana.
If it was 3 mana, I would immediately play that card.
Yeah.
Like, originally when I built this deck, I made it 4 color and played a single Smoldering Marsh so that I could splash Radiant Flames.
This is going with the theme of everything costs one more dollar in Zendikar.
Yeah, everything costs one too many dollars. That card is exactly one too many dollars, unfortunately.
Clutch of Currents is a sorcery speed on summon.
Nope.
Sad. But it does have Awaken 3 for 5, which, think about that for a sec. That is like your Riftwing Cloudsgate.
That is Riftwing Cloudsgate.
Or Cloud Skite, whatever.
Yeah, Cloudsgate. You know, you're talking about the first one.
All right, so that's not too bad.
No, not horrible, but you can. I'm not in the market for just unsummon, unfortunately.
We don't want. We don't want Siege Rhino trigger.
No, thank you. No, no, I do not want Den Protector V2. No, thank you.
All right, Andu Rising, one and a white for a sorcery. Whenever a creature attacks this turn, it gains lifelink until end of turn. Awaken 4 for 5. Does not fit in here. Interesting art though. It's kind of cool. It's like a little. It's like a ram or something made out of stone. Rush of Ice. It freezes a creature.
That card I consider blue sorcery. Problem, but again, it just doesn't. It doesn't deal with a threat. I'd rather cast it Ruinous Path.
This is like exactly the same cost and same awaken cost as the Unsummon, and it does a very similar thing because it just like you know, just delays the beating. It prolongs the beating.
Yeah, would but rather play a Ruinous Path.
But if you're playing the Wrath, you know, what's wrong with Rush of Ice?
It just doesn't, like, so you can ice a thing on turn 2 and that's fine.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't, like, deal with it. So you still have to deal with it on turns 3 and 4 until you get to Languish or Wrath on 5.
Okay. All right, just playing a little devil's advocate.
No, and I'm totally willing to fight back.
All right, Sheer Drop. Did you mention that one in your deck? That might be
That's destroy target tap creature for 3 as a sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
One too many dollars.
Six for three. Yeah,
literally one too many dollars. If that was a 2-mana spell, it would be in the deck.
Yeah, but and so it's just it's like strictly worse than Swift Reckoning, isn't it? But yes. It has an awaken cost, so not strictly.
I'm pretty sure Swift Reckoning rotating anyways.
It is in Origins.
Oh, Spell Mastery is in Origins. Yeah, duh. Okay.
Yeah.
So good. Got it.
It's much better for you, but you know. Just something to consider, and then the last one.
And I don't
write this last one off right away. Think about it for a sec. This is a 6-mana, take an extra turn, exile. The awaken is 6, which is a huge awaken cost for 6 blue 9-mana.
Yeah,
so
that's a ton of mana.
This
so
is
you
huge.
Can, like 6 them.
No, so also, you cannot play this and then reanimate it with your blue Eternal Witness, whatever the hell that guy's called.
Oh yeah, then no. But, if you could like buy that card back, oh boy.
But think about like the 9-mana for the awaken cost.
Six.
You get a 6/6 out of the deal, and you get to attack with it right away.
Also worth noting for those of you that don't know how awaken works, you can awaken your Shambling Vents and put the counters on them, and then activate them and attack with like 5/6 Shambling Vents.
Yeah, so late game, I don't see any problem with awakening your Shambling Vents, going to your extra turn, and then attacking and gaining 8 life.
Yeah,
it's kind of similar to like a Sphinx's Revelation stabilizer.
Yeah, it's not bad.
One extra card and tap some land. I mean, you had 9 to play this, so that leaves 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 left over, right? If you're going to be animating your Shambling Vents and attacking. But it is kind of heavy blue.
Yeah.
I mean, with 9 mana, you better have 3 blue.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, this is just like a thought experiment that I was like putting together. I'm kind of excited to see how good Fathom Feeder is. I'm thinking one of the Valor Stances could be a Fathom Feeder, and the other one could be something else. But I'm kind of excited to like try and play this deck. I want to try and borrow it because I don't want to pay $700 for it or whatever dumb number of dollars this deck is going to cost.
Yeah. Is there any way to kind of load up your graveyard to like make the Eternal Witness guy more toolboxy, and then you can run some of the one-ofs of the Awaken cards that might be like marginally good in some matchups?
So there's no way to mill cards. Like, I could play Jace.
Oh, yeah, that's one.
I don't think Jace just, I don't think it fits into this deck. Like, it might actually just, Jace might be insane in this deck because, like, you have 27 lands, so looting is probably, like, completely reasonable. So it might be that Jace fits into this deck.
And can you minus 3 and awaken?
Let's read Awaken. If you cast a spell for 5 black, you can.
Yeah, okay.
You can minus 3 and awaken.
It's kind of cool how the awaken's like sort of on curve. Like you can play it for its regular cost, then you can Eternal Witness it, and then you can awaken it when you've got more mana.
Yeah, like you can play the Eternal Witness like 2 turns later and then awaken Scattered Seeds.
So like that means that you can play like the 4 Eternal Witnesses in your deck and like no other creatures, and then it's just all answer cards because those answer cards then become beaters when you need them to.
Correct, yeah. And I thought about not playing Fathom Feeder, but my like the lower end of my curve was very glutted at 3. So I put Fathom Feeder in as like a thing that absorbs a little damage in the front end. And if you're playing control, you can like beat down with it, and it's a threat to draw an extra card later. And you can win like the mill war and weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like I decided to play Fathom Feeder just as a concession to the fact that a Tarka Red exists. If Tarka Red didn't exist, Fathom Feeder would probably be Jace.
Yeah.
Or just more answer cards.
Okay. All right. Well, cool.
But yeah, this is a sweet one. I just thought of. I'm gonna have to try and put it together and see what it does.
I just want to blast through one real quick because I mentioned the Saltai Eldrazi earlier.
Sure.
And actually,
sure.
there's an article about it on our site too.
Yeah, let me take a look at it. I haven't actually read the article. I did not spoiler alert myself on this one.
So there's a more updated version of this than the one that's actually on the site. But basically what I went into was Fathom Feeder. It's built around Fathom Feeder and Oblivion Tower.
That's not even a thing I thought of. Like, I'm just scrolling through the article, just kind of Ghost Fireblade. Oh, baby. Wow.
Well, hang on, because I didn't even go there.
Oh, man. You didn't go to Ghost Fireblade Town?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God. How did we not do this?
But we talked that, like, when the spoilers were coming out, we were looking at, like, how the Ingest was going to be, like, an engine for, like, all the other stuff that you needed to do with the Eldrazi-themed stuff.
How did we not go to... I'm just stunned about Ghost Fireblade Town. Sorry.
All right. So let me read this list, but let me pull up the more recent version so I can be more accurate, because there were some changes to that. But basically, like, Fathom Feeder, like, makes this deck happen because the Ingest becomes, like, functional, like, mana that you can use for, like, kicker spells, basically. Because the processors need cards in exile to do, like, their extra kicker effect, right?
Okay.
So, all right. So if you can generate those resources with, like, a Fathom Feeder, like, connecting in early turns, you can get stuff like Ulamog's Nullifier to be even more effective. Pull this up here.
Okay. I can get behind this. This seems kind of cool.
Alright, here's my list. 3 Catacomb Sifter, which is the 1 black-green 2/3 to void, puts a Scion into play, and then whenever another creature dies, you scry. Card is
Yeah, it's like bonkers. The mini, I don't remember the guy's name. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about, the 4-mana guy that we used to have.
Yeah, the 4/5 green guy.
We've got 2 Den Protectors, 4 Fathom Seeders, of course. Fathom Feeder, excuse me.
Yeah.
4 Hangerbacks, because why not? You need 2 drops. 2 Nissas, 3 Oblivion Sower, possibly going to go up to 4 with that, not sure. 4 Ulamog's Nullifier, which is the flash 2 and a blue black 2/3.
Right?
Yep, counterspell. Now it takes 2 cards from exile into the graveyard, so it's a lot of
2 hits from Fathom Feeder. No big deal.
Well, Fathom Feeder is not the only way, but I'll keep going here. Ulamog, 1 Ulamog, because that's kind of your end game.
All
3
right.
From Beyond, which is the Awakening Zone that can sack to search for an Eldrazi.
That's fancy. All right.
My favorite thing to do with this is to sack to search for an Ulamog's Nullifier when you've got 6 mana in counter a spell.
Oh my god, right, that's brilliant. You're a genius.
I've got 2 Reality Shift in here because
it exiles a creature. So
Hangerback Walker is a huge issue, and then exiling a creature is just more...
Yeah, get your Hangerback Walker out of here. I'd like you to have a 2/2 instead. Thank you.
But that's the thing where I was talking about complete disregard, and I just, like, it doesn't really fit on curve in this deck, and I worry about the Hangerback Walker situation there. So I think Reality Shift is needed.
Even I'd say try complete disregard at some point. I think it's a coin flip on which one you play. Play 1/1, see which one you'd rather have.
And then check this out. Spell Shrivel is a very playable counter spell.
All right, hold on.
2 and a blue, instant. Hey, everything costs $1 more in battle for Zendikar. You just got to get used to it.
Everything costs an extra dollar.
This is a poor man's cancel, basically. And cancel is 16 cents. So here it is. Counter target spell, and this is controller, pays 4.
That's a poor man's Mana Leak. Okay.
And then if it's counter this way, exile it instead of putting it into its owner's graveyard. Yeah,
it's
it
poor
is
man's Mana Leak. Right.
But 4 is significant. That's going to counter anything you want it to.
I will agree with that.
And it exiles, so that's more fuel for the fire here.
All right. I do want to make mention, though.
Yeah.
We should just call Battle for Zendikar the card Knock Life Block, because all of this is a bad beat. Every bit of it.
We've got 1 more Ugin, or 1 Ugin for the payoff.
Sure.
And then 3 Transgress the Mind, which is 1 in a black sorcery. Target player reveals his or her hand. Choosing
a things.
Card with Kamrina costs 3 or more in exile.
Yeah, the big thing.
Exile,
right.
Too, yeah.
Right.
So that is, like... That card is insanely good right now.
Wait, it's 3?
Again, cost 2 mana, which you do not want to be paying for a card that does that effect. But, yep, 3 or more.
Is it really? Don't make me... Because don't make me feel like I misread this card.
It is three or greater.
Oh, God. So I didn't play that in my control deck because I thought it said four or greater. I got it confused with Horribly Awry.
Yeah, no, this hits anything you want.
Because I think you do want to get their like cancels and things like that, like their Scatter the Winds or whatever, their three mana spells. But yeah, okay. But yeah, this that deck seems kind of cool. I don't know. Is it like a mid range? Does it play like a mid range deck?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yep.
I don't. Yeah.
So let me explain. So you've got no one drops, and that's kind of the case in all of Standard right now.
Sure.
So that's where a lot of your tap lands come into play. And I'm playing a four full. No, I'm not. I guess I have three Sunken Hollows. I thought I had four. Three Sunken Hollows in the deck, and then three Lumbering Falls. So there's a lot of tapped lands. And everything produces colored mana. In fact, the color fixing is pretty efficient. So I'm able to run like two Blighted Fen because you need a sacrifice outlet for, you know, situations where you just need to remove that one more creature and they don't have a bajillion Hangerback Walker tokens on the board.
Yep.
That's the Edict one.
Yeah, I know. And so then
your turn twos are like Fathom Feeder, Hangerback Walker, or Transgress the Mind. So there are lots of turn two plays. Turn three, you can go with Catacomb Sifter
or
Nissa, if you have to. But you've also got the opportunity to hold for like Spell Shrivel. And if it works out that way and they don't have enough presence on the board where they're just going to like take you down, Spell Shrivel on turn three into like turn four Ulamog's Nullifier makes for like some really good
The curve of like Fathom Feeder, attack you for one, ingest,
yeah,
Spell Shrivel you, untap, attack you for one, ingest, Ulamog's Nullifier you, counter that thing, attack you for one, ingest, untap on turn five with another Ulamog's Nullifier. That seems kind of backbreaking.
It is. It's proven to be pretty efficient. The Sower, the Oblivion Sower, is pretty bonkers.
So that's the card. So like everything that costs more than four in this deck,
yeah,
I thought just like stuck out like a sore thumb. I'm like, that seems not great because why?
So are you asking me? Or are you saying yeah, you
well,
came around?
It just didn't make sense when I was looking at the deck because it was like this looks like an aggro deck. And then all of a sudden, there's like these five gigantic mana things. Like,
right. It almost plays like kind of like a mid range control deck with all the counter spells and stuff. And then, you know, like your Fathom Feeder is functionally a removal piece if you want it to be too.
Yeah, I mean, you can trade it in for something else. Sure.
But it's not like a typical ramp. Like it's got the ramp pieces. It's got like fairies, like Singleton, Ulamog, Singleton, Ugin. And then the Oblivion Sower at six is not too much. Like that's not a ramp target. That's a ramp engine, you know? But really, once you resolve that and you hit the lands, like you're gonna be like on average getting like three lands out of that with the combination of like the Fathom Feeder ingest and the activations from the Fathom Feeder ingest as well.
Fair enough.
And then Oblivion Sower itself exiles four, so you can play an Oblivion Sower on six, and it's even better on seven when you can leave a blue or black mana on tap too, so that you've got on color mana, and a lot of their fetch lands are alive in your deck because you're playing three colors.
Nice.
So. There's so many like utility lands in this in the format right now where opportunities exist for you to hit like you know
all
like their lumbering falls, you can get their man lands out of it, you can get their sack lands out of it, you can get their spell lands out of it.
Okay, this is
and a lot of those things are coming to play untapped when you Oblivion Sower. So it's a free 5/8 that leaves you mana to play something like your Spell Shrivel.
Or Ulamog's Nullifier. Okay.
Or Reality Shift.
This is fancy. I like it. I like where you're going.
And then From Beyond is where you what you use to search out your Ulamog, of course, when it comes time to do that. But yeah, even better, like I said, searching out the Nullifier is great, and then searching out the Oblivion Sower is great, because really once you resolve that Sower, like, we're on, then it's happening.
Like, I honestly wouldn't get rid of Bitter Blossom. Like, four mana Bitter Blossoms seem pretty reasonable.
It always seems good, but on average, I'm sacrificing that spell after I get my second token.
That's fine. Like, a lot of times I don't expect Bitter Blossom to live past turn two.
Yeah. I mean, I just need more from it. But then, here's the thing. My sideboard is a little bit transformative because it goes into three Wasteland Strangler, which is a sweet processor. Two and a black for a 3/2 Devoid. Enters battlefield, you can process a card from exile. And target creature gets -3/-3. So
that's
really
what I thought
good
it was.
Against
I thought it was the
aggressive deck. Yeah, it's
oh,
great.
Oh, man, that's
great.
Really good, yeah.
Got one Dig for long game. Two Dispel, which, hey, that's in Standard right now. Surprise.
Yes, it is.
Two Grave Birthing, which I terribly misread. That card's got to come out. But we'll talk about that in a second. Two Horribly Awry. which I think those need to work their way into the main deck, at least one of. I'll talk about that.
Cards very good.
One more reality shift when you're facing down four hanger backs or, you know, the ramp deck. Sure. Two Sultai Charm, because it does everything, and Languish is, like, our best friend in a lot of
Sultai Charm matchups. Doesn't do everything, but sure. There aren't that many mono belly creatures.
All right. Well, it is a catch-all with the Destroy Target Artifact or Enchantment.
Yeah, it's very nice, because enchantments are on the rise.
So Grave Birthing looks really good on paper. It's two and a black for an instant. Target opponent exiles a card from his or her graveyard. You put a 1/1 Scion into play, and you draw a card. So it puts a card in their exile, which is great. It gives you a blocker, which is great, or a ramp spell, and then it cycles.
Doesn't it do all of those things?
It does all of those things. But the problem is the exile a card from their graveyard is almost entirely useless because they choose which one it is.
Oh, it's not target?
No. What, can it not be target? Is that too much to ask?
If this was target, this card would be great. Because they'd like flip identity protector, target this thing, and you're like, no, get a guy, draw a card. And
right,
that seems
right.
Really reasonable.
Is that too good?
No. Like, I don't think so either. It's like one mana, exile your thing, draw a card. Yeah. And then there was like Beckon Apparition, it's like exile target thing, get a spirit.
Yeah.
So like paying an extra mana to get both effects is fine. Like,
yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's $1 more. This is perfect.
Yeah. So, I've been playing this deck for about 2 weeks now online. Sure. And it's really damn good. It's really good. I'm serious. And
Like it's Tarkarin. I'm sure you've played against.
I feel like when I'm playing the aggro decks, I have a game against them, but that's obviously going to be a bad matchup for me.
Yeah.
I've got the Languish. I've got I've got Fathom Feeders, and I've got Hangerback Walkers for early interaction.
Sure.
And I really don't have a good way to deal with like the opponent going wide except for the two Languish, so I think that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
Because Reality Shift is like the most awful removal spell against a deck like that.
Just play Complete Disregard.
But once you get
just pay an extra dollar, man. That's just
right.
Just
I guess
$1 more.
But the problem is like Reality Shift just seems so on curve for us because we want to be doing Spell Shrivel on 3. And Spell Shrivel, like, really is, like, the all-star in this deck. That card is severely underrated in Standard right now.
So, like, the thing is, though, is that Complete Disregard's an instant. So if they play a creature, you can just Complete Disregard it.
We can't afford to do that. We've got to do both. We've got to be doing both.
Well, yeah, but, like, on turn 3, you're only doing one or the other.
Right.
Like, you're only behind the aggro decks. And, like, this is like they're attacking you for two and playing a guy. So they're just going to play a guy, and then you just you can Spell Shrivel the guy, and then Complete Disregard the next guy, untap, take no damage. And so, like, they play their next guy. And
meanwhile,
so
they're beating your face, though. Like, we can't afford to not do something on turn two. So we've got to have our Fathom Feeder. We've got to have our Hangerback Walker, which is a bad Doom Traveler against them.
So it might end up playing horribly awry. And cutting down on the number of spell shrivels.
And that, yeah, exactly. And I was thinking the same thing. So that needs to work its way into the deck. So
yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to cut the number of spell shrivels because, like I said, that's the all star. Like, that card does so much work.
I think we
need to lose one nullifier because the process cost is just so intense.
Too high.
When you resolve it, though, it's great. I mean, it's the best Mystic Snake you'll ever play. And it's pretty consistent that you can resolve it. It really is. But having that become a horribly awry is going to make it even more consistent because then the other three are going to go off more often.
Yep, seems good.
You resolve an Oblivion Sower and you mill, exile them for 4, that's enough gas to like just coast for
turn
the rest of the game on your Ulamog's Nullifier.
Yeah, all of your processors, Seems fine.
Yeah. So that's that. Nissa pretty consistently flips
with
Oblivion
Sower.
Which is a pretty sweet interaction.
Yeah, or you just like cast Oblivion Sower, untap, cast Nissa, play the 7th land.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because you have Scion, so you might play it early.
And we do run Lumbering Falls, but I almost never am activating that. Like it might as well be like the green blue land that gains a life. But when you get a lot of land, like you've got
to
do something with it.
No reason.
If you don't have any cards in your hand,
reason.
So you might as well play a 3/3 that can beat. And you might as well play a Blighted Fen.
Yep.
So Bloody Cataract is another possibility. That's the one that draws 2 cards.
Yeah, 2 sweet decks here, I think. Just like, if you like control, try that one. If you like a more mid-range strategy that can beat down, play a little tempo game, you've got a good one there.
So
I think there's
our Brew Corner.
Certainly. I had one more thing for Banned and Restricted announcement.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
This is I'm gonna take you away to Eternal Central again. You're going to get to visit the Legacy and Vintage Corner, Corey. I know it's scary.
Oh boy.
So ban restricted announcement. Nothing banned or unbanned in Modern. That's gotta be a mistake. I feel like something could have got banned or something could have got unbanned.
Oh man, this could be a really long conversation. I'm going to defer my opinion on this one. But
Yeah,
let's just say
we might
I
have to
am
write an
happy that
article.
there's
We
nothing
might
there.
have to write an article about it. It's so weird. I think they also might be holding it because they have Modern Pro Tours, so they have to hold the bans till the Modern Pro
Oh, that
Tours.
didn't stop him in the past.
It didn't stop them in the past, but like, especially if the Modern Pro Tour is close, they have to consider that and I think hold the ban. Unless it's such a disaster for Modern that it can't, like, you can't hold up. So,
Okay. All right.
no bans in
Well, we'll
Modern.
talk about that next week.
No bans in Modern. No bans in Standard. Shocking. Thought they might have banned Seedrine. Too
They
good.
banned Dig Through Time in Standard.
Nope, still legal. Good try though. They did ban Dig Through Time and Restricted. Banned in Legacy, Restricted in Vintage. No shock on either of these fronts. Dig Through Time was warping the blue decks into such a way that you just hemorrhaged your cantrips. You just randomly cast Brainstorms and Ponders and Ataxian Probes and just didn't care. And you played like 12 of those cards and Dig Through Time, and you could still do all that and play Jace and Tarmogoyf from the same deck. Like it just created these weird velocity-based blue decks that could play two other colors of any type. It kind of pushed the best creatures to become Jace, Vryn's Prodigy, Young Pyromancer, and Monastery Mentor by about 100 miles.
Yeah.
And like either you were playing Dig Through Time or you were just wrong. Like lands was still a deck, but it was wrong because Dig Through Time was just the best card. So it like took away all the incentive to not play Blue and Legacy.
So enjoy it while you can in standard.
Yeah, Standard's the only place you get to play it. And Vintage, you can play one copy. One copy.
That's crazy.
Not much effect on Vintage. There are only a few decks playing three copies, but a lot of decks were playing two, so they have to cut one card.
I want to remind everyone that that card was spoiled and pre-sailed for like, I think I got mine for a buck,
Yeah,
$1.
$2.
Not to say that it was like the most expensive card, but if it was a dollar, like obviously we're like overlooking some power level on that
It
thing.
was $1, and then it spiked to like 20, and now it's settled at like 5 because it's banned in three
Bef
formats.
well, even before this last ban announcement, it was five, right?
Yeah. Well,
Okay.
it's banned in three formats, so it's going to stay 5 until it rotates out of Standard, and that's going to be like 2, so everybody gets their card free
And
each.
then quick sidebar, Jace, Vryn's Prodigy was pre-ordered $10. That was one of the cheapest planeswalkers.
Yep,
Okay,
80
go on.
bucks. 80 bucks. Whee! So that happened in Legacy. Black Vice was unbanned in Legacy.
Yep.
This is not a surprise to me as a Legacy player. Black Vice was just this like random holdover from the list. It was kind of like Land Tax. Land Tax, it didn't make much sense why Land Tax was still on the ban list. At the time it got banned, it made sense because Land Tax could be like this oppressive deck. But like there's not a lot of ways to abuse it now, and the cards are just better. Same thing here with Black Vice. It's
Right.
easy for players to empty their hand between Daze, Delver, Force of Will. You can get below four cards if you really need to. People will play Black Vice decks. They'll play Sinkhole, they'll play Nether Void. They'll play cards to like strand your cards in your hand so you take damage from Black Vice. Burn might use it as a sideboard card against grindy blue matchups.
How about Legacy 8-Rack with Hymn to Turok? Is that gonna happen?
So you do know what Black Vice does, right?
Is it the opposite? Am I thinking
Yes.
around?
Black
Okay.
Vice is your opponents take damage for each card in their hand above four.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh,
Yeah.
the rack. The rack is the one,
The rack is
which
the
is why
one
we
that,
call it that.
which is why I call it that.
Okay, so then
Yes.
it's not gonna happen because we've already had
No, you'll
that.
see like a Poxy Nether Void deck that's
Okay.
like Smallpox, Sinkhole, Nether Void, which is a 4-mana enchantment that counters every spell unless its controller pays three.
Okay.
Extra,
Yeah.
so it's just like a bunch of cards to strand cards in your hand, to where your spells don't do anything. So, you might see that deck kind of come up, but not much else. To in Legacy, Vintage, Chalice of the Void was restricted. They're just basically taking a shot at the Workshop deck. The Workshop deck posted like 40% of the top eights on Modo, or like 4-0s on Modo, and was in just infinite top eights. It's like a two copy or three copy deck in Vintage. Something needed to get restricted. I don't agree with Chalice of the Void. their logic was that, you know, oh, Chalice of the Void keeps you from playing Moxen. Because a lot of times when your opponent draws two Chalices in their workshop deck, they like play all their Moxes and Lotus and whatever, play all their power, and then they play Chalice with zero so that you can't play all your power and you're like super far behind. But the more backbreaking one, I think, is Chalice on one. You can't play Brainstorm, Ponder, Preordaining, Ataxian Probe, Ancestral Recall, stuff like that. So I think that's the more backbreaking one. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to kind of produce an environment that was conducive to playing Moxen. So they restricted Chalice of the Void. It's reasonable. I think they should have restricted Lodestone Void, because you can beat a bunch of counterspell cards and, you know, Thorn of Amethyst and stuff like that, tax effects, unless they're beating you to death with a 5-3. And that's kind of the oppressive card out of that deck, is they just like, here's a Thorn of Amethyst that beats you to death as a 5-3. And they can play it on turn one, and so you're just so far behind that you can't win. And that's not fun. But that's the card that needed to be restricted. It didn't get restricted, but that's fine. The deck will still be, like, you'll still have to have a plan for Workshop and a plan for the other decks and Wizards as well. And then Thirst for Knowledge got unbanned. So the card was a very impressive card as a card of Mage Engine when it first got released, because Chalice of the Void came out, and people were just, like, jamming four of this card, and Time Vault was not restricted yet, and things like that. And then they errated it, and it didn't get restricted until a little bit later. So people were playing a bunch of Time Vaults with the Take Key. That was busted. But it's just been on the list forever. They finally were just like, you know, this card can be free and set into the wild. It will create decks that were more artifact-based that want to play like Mox Opal and stuff like that. It'll open the space for them to be good again, because they can play a bunch of Thirst for Knowledge, get rid of their extra copies of Mox Opal and Chrome Mox, and that'll be cool. They can play, like, there's like a Goblin Welder Mindslaver deck that you can play, where you can Thirst for Knowledge, discard your Mindslaver, like Goblin Welder your Moxen away, and then activate Mindslaver and take your opponent's turn. And that's cool. That'll be a thing. But other than that, nothing else happening in the Vintage Legacy scene. So
yeah.
But that was the ban restricted.
That's going back to that Chalice, I think there's a really straightforward explanation for why it was banned. And it was like, sure, you know, typically it's like, oh, this card is in every deck and it is oppressive to the format. But this one's basically like, this card is oppressive to Moxes, and this is a format where everyone wants to play Moxes. So let's get rid of it.
That's literally, if you read their statement, that's basically what it said.
I think that's hilarious. They're not beating around the bush with that one. They're just like, hey, this is where people go to play these like $100, multi-$100 cards, and we want to allow them to do that. So take your fun, please, elsewhere.
I mean, it's you can still play it as a one-off.
Okay.
So
take your three fun police elsewhere. You can keep one.
Sure.
All right. You gonna juicy deck tech this?
Sure. Yeah, this deck is stupid.
Okay, here we go. Modern Troll Warship. I just want to just hit this quick, because MTG Goldfish posted this in an article. It's their budget deck, and I think it's hilarious. We couldn't pass it up.
So I love
acknowledge that it exists.
If you look at this budget deck, the most expensive card in it, or the most expensive column, two Eternal Witness. 13.
Two Eternal Witness, yeah. So here's the list. One, Birds. Four, Llanowar Elf. Okay, so there's the budget part right here. We're going to run Llanowar Elf over Birds, but that's all you need. Four, Sylvan Keraton. Two, Eternal Witness. Four, Troll Ascetic. This is the 3-mana, 3/2 Hexproof and Regenerate. Four, Witchstalker, which is the 3-mana, 3/3 Hexproof. When an opponent casts a blue or black spell, you put a counter on it. He doesn't even have protection from black.
Oh, wait.
He just gets bigger with it.
Oh, wait, he's Hexproof. He doesn't need protection.
Right, yep. Sigarda, one Sigarda. Three, Sun Titan, because sometimes you have to recur your Troll Ascetic after they die. Yeah,
sometimes you have to give back your Hexproof creature. All
right. Four, Dismember, because life is not an option. Four, Oblivion Ring. Two, Harmonize. Four, Warship. If you control a creature, damage that we dealt to you that would reduce your life total to less than one reduces it to one instead. This is a 4-mana enchantment.
So worth noting, you can be retarded and kill yourself with Dismember.
You can, yes, because you can pay the life. Right. And so this deck is banks on the fact that no one plays removal for 4-mana enchantments in Modern, because Abrupt Decay cannot hit Warship. The fact that this card costs 4 is good
for it. It actually banks on the fact that nobody plays removal for Hexproof creatures in Modern.
Well, that too. I mean, so we opt for like Supreme Verdict over like Wrath of God and Damnation. And Wrath of God and Damnation say they can't be regenerated, but Supreme Verdict does not, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so there's our problem. Anger of the Gods deals 3 damage to each creature, and if it was dealt damage, you exile it. That would kill a troll, wouldn't it?
No.
Exile it?
No, I think.
Oh, but it says...
Because you put a regeneration shield on it.
Well, what does it say? He's got that in the... All right, checking. Yeah, I think it does.
Does it really?
Maybe not. Maybe not. I'll check that out. So you're saying that the regeneration shield would protect it?
I think it should, because it's whenever it's dealt lethal damage, it's removed from combat, and instead of dying, is it's removed from combat and it's tapped.
Yeah. Well, anyways, read the article. I'll put in the show note. There's a still that he took from one of his games where the affinity player somehow got 129 life and has like a bajillion creatures on the board.
Oh, who's just
and the worship player has 1 life.
Perennial Painting plus Signal Pest.
All 4 worships out. Is that right? Okay, Signal Pest does it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and he's got 2. Right, he's got 2 Perennial Paintings
on. Perennial Painting on your Signal Pest, put your whole deck into play.
So who's got more cards in their library? Because that's who's gonna win the game.
yeah, that'd be the case.
Yeah, so there's that. If the affinity player played any number of thought casts during the game, they lose, right?
that seems pretty correct. Let me see if that's...
Check it out. There's some videos, and he's also got a pretty good explanation of, like, what beats this deck. And he goes into, like, okay, counterspells are bad, Thought's Disease is bad, Wrath of God and Damnation are bad. But generally, there's not a lot that can solve this puzzle that you throw them into.
Yeah, he put the number of outs... 0.1 sideboard outs to troll on average. 0.4 main deck outs to troll. So most of the time your trolls aren't dying. They're getting the Shrekening is happening. So it's a lot of can they be worship.
And then we've got a non-budget Bant version on the bottom that basically goes into blue for 1 Sphinx's Revelation and then some sideboard dispels and negates and things.
Oh my.
So interesting. Interesting build. He's got Noble Hierarch, of course, instead of Llanowar.
So, I'm surprised that a lot of the troll aesthetics didn't become Thrones and only had 1 Thrun.
Yeah, yeah. He gets the Witch Stalker in the non-budget one, too.
So hard to kill.
Right.
All right.
He's got a Thrun in the sideboard as well, though. One in the main, one in the sideboard.
Yeah.
All right, so that's that. That's the end of our cast. Shout out to Saffron Olive. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. I think that's all we got. GP Madison is coming up this weekend. That's exciting. It's sealed, so I'm not going to be there. I've got a lot going on. My non-magic is I've got my release shows for my band. We just recorded an album in the last 2 years, and we finally got the freaking thing done, and it's pretty awesome. We went to a shop to get it printed, and it's like a little wallet fold that we got. We had an artist that we hired to do the art, and he did a really awesome job on it. And art so happens to be like perfect for like this like foil version of our printing. And so Super Duper, which is the company, I'm gonna just give them a little PR here. Is this really awesome company in Madison that does printing of like CDs and stuff. And the guys there were like, hey, this art would be perfect for this like hollow foil version. So basically, like if you can imagine like a foil magic card with like the like printed on like the foil paper, we have like these special editions of our album now that are printed on this hollow foil.
That's cool, dude.
And it's really sweet. And the disc itself is gonna have like the image printed on it with the clear background, so that it also has like the hollow foil effect with the you know, like the shininess of the CD. So pretty excited about those. I'm playing in Milwaukee on Friday and Madison on Saturday, and I'll do some little outro music from that, so you can
awesome.
Just in case you're curious.
Unfortunately, I don't have non-magic this week.
Oh really? None.
Yeah. I've been working Infinite, and this weekend, one of these shops near me has a Legacy tournament for a Mox Emerald, so the winner gets a piece of Power 9.
Yeah, go get that Power 9.
Yeah, I'm gonna put the miracles back together, and I'm gonna go get that piece of power.
All right,
and if not, I'm gonna feel like a douchebag. But right. Whatever.
Careful not to run any digs, Daryl.
No Dictor times here, dealer. No Dictor times.
All
right.
Well, that's all we got. Thanks for listening.
Perfect.
Cardnock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. You can be reached at cardnocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardnocklifepodcast@gmail.com.